The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined by my colleague and good friend, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
I thought we got called for pass interference to start today's show. Coming up today, we begin the wonderful process of going bowling for dollars. Although the memo must have been worded the wrong way, Jacob behind the camera showed up wearing his bowling shirt. We add another chapter to the files of lies, damned lies, and statistics. And for once tonight, we tell you that revenge is not a dish best served cold.
Let's start with first takes today. Dave, Monday Night Football last night, where'd you watch it? What'd you see? What'd you do? Where'd you go? I'm sure everyone wants to know.
You know exactly where I was and how many calories that were consumed in the process.
Take the over.
Yeah, okay. Monday night, Barrymore. Why not? We've told you about it. But here's a nice little touch we found last night. One of the disappointments of living in Las Vegas is you don't get to eat seasonally. A lot of great restaurants are on the Strip. A lot of great chefs. But they tend to stick to relatively safe menus, and they don't turn it over as much. We do have winter in Las Vegas. It gets cold. It gets wet. The last couple days have been a good example. The Barrymore, our new favorite place, has actually made adjustments for that, and we like people thinking outside the box a little bit. Wonderful braised duck last night, served with homemade pasta chitara. Wonderful. Winter food, an awfully nice touch. And while some people might say, well, you consumed a lot of calories, they were there also. Thanks to a visitor, though, from Covers who picked up the tab for us. And sure, he's going to be surprised when he gets back to Halifax and sees that little snifter of Louis XIV that we added on after he left. But that's okay. It's all good. Teddy, outside of the calories, what else did you bring in this morning?
Monday Night Football. You know, we got to talk about the game last night a little bit. What was the difference? Point spread-wise, obviously. Talk about the offensive numbers, talk about the defensive numbers, special teams touchdowns. We saw one last night for Seattle, the first touchdown of the game, their only touchdown for a long stretch in that ballgame until they kind of put it away late with a couple of big second-half TDs. But those special teams touchdowns in college football, in the NFL, and particularly in the NFL, man, they go a long, long way towards determining point spread winners. We look at the end of the day, NFL Sunday, you're going to see at least, at least about half the games come within a touchdown of the spread. So when you get that defensive score, when you get that special team score, when you get the non-offensive touchdown, goes, again, a long way towards covering your number. The other thing I wanted to talk about at the sort of first take for today, I want to talk about the two teams we saw on Monday Night Football last night, both Seattle and St. Louis. Neither of whom, the Seahawks have been a little bit better of late in terms of covering numbers. St. Louis has been as bad as it gets. They're 2-11 straight up and 2-11 against the number. And when I look at this stage of the season, here in December, yeah, you're focusing on the teams that are going to be playing in the playoffs, but I'm also trying to spend some time looking at the teams that aren't likely to go to the postseason. Does this team have hope for next year? Are there building blocks in place? Is there potential for a good future wager when the NFL season over-under wins come out in the summer of 2012? I want to make a week one wager on these type of teams. Both St. Louis and Seattle, just something to stick in the back of your mind for next year. I think both those teams have the potential to have point spread success in 2012. There's some nice building blocks in place, certainly in Seattle, but for St. Louis as well. When a team is so bad against the spread one year, and much of that, at least some of that, is injury-related, next year, if they're healthier, Rams might have some play-on potential as well. Let's shift over to Market Watch. You want to talk about the opening numbers from the Monday night, the two teams that played on Monday night. Both are dogs this week. Chicago, a 4-point home favorite over Seattle. Total in that game, about 35.5. And Cincinnati, a 6-point road favorite at St. Louis. Total 38.5. Those are the openers from the two teams that played last night for their coming games this Sunday. Now, we got to talk about finals weeks. Dave, you've been taking any exams?
Not a lot of games on the college basketball board in the next few days, and we're not going to play many of them. And there's a good reason for it. Now, people who aren't familiar with it may not understand why the schedule gets so light. It's final exams week at most of these schools. And we've talked about this on the show a little bit before. People say, well, these guys don't go to class. It's not that big a deal. This is the one time they really do have to make the grades, because if you don't pass in the fall, you're not eligible to keep playing in the spring. So a couple of things to look for here. One is be careful, because the players themselves are going to be a little distracted. You can imagine that if your basketball season starts halfway through the semester, and look at these teams that had to travel to Hawaii, to Alaska, to the Bahamas, to Puerto Rico, that can get a little bit disruptive. For even a good student can fall behind and have to be making up real hard coming to finals week. So the players you got to be a little careful with, but also the home court advantages. The students aren't going to be there as much. This is the time where the libraries are going to be more packed than the auditoriums. So because of those reasons, this is the week that we say tread lightly. Now, we are going to play later in today's show in Money Time. We've got one that we does think works. But this is a week for you to be very, very careful. We've got a lot of great bowls coming up, a lot of NFL coming up. The NBA is going to join us in a couple of weeks. Be careful with the board this week. Make sure if you get in play that you've really got something to work with.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that most universities say, screw it. You know, we're not going to schedule any games this week. And that's why the college basketball betting board is so light. And, of course, in a world where the NBA doesn't get into play until after Christmas, this is a light week. But I'm telling you, next week isn't. And that week between Christmas and New Year's, you better have tune into the show every day, because we're going to be loaded. We're talking about NBA, college hoops tournaments all over the country, college bowls in full swing, NFL with playoff matchups being determined. That's going to be a lot of fun. So even though this is a little bit of a calm before the storm, you know what? The storm is definitely coming.
So we set up the storm a little bit today. We will begin our Bowling for Dollars today in Money Time. We're going to do the Temple game for Saturday that's being played in Albuquerque. Then the next 2 days, we'll follow up with two other bowls. We'll do Utah State, Ohio tomorrow, San Diego State, and UL Lafayette on Thursday. Actually, we will cover every bowl game right through the BCS Championship.
And speaking of bowl games, we want you to bowl for letters. No, that's a bad segue. I don't even know where I was going there.
Jeez.
Bowl in some questions, you know, bowl of cereal. Bottom line, come on, guys, keep those emails coming. Sportsday@covers.com. Okay, keep shaking your head. That's the appropriate
thing. The only thing that comes to mind is toilet bowl for that. I mean, that's about where that one goes. I'm sorry.
Well spoken. Bottom line, sportsday@covers.com for those letters. Follow us on Twitter. We're getting, tweets. We're starting to tweet every day now and getting a bunch of followers. Join at Vegas Sports Day. That's one word, at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, get involved in the community. Active threads and discussions going on right now. Covers.com/posting forum. When we come back, we're going to break down just what the Orlovsky Gambit means in the post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from TalkTales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Yesterday on this show, we showed you an image from Indiana right after the Hoosiers had upset Kentucky, and we told you how real that win actually was. Today we're going to show you the Kansas fans' reacting to Saturday's win over Ohio State, but this time, it's to tell you about a win that doesn't mean anything near what the scoreboard would suggest and what some of the mathematical power ratings are subsequently going to show for these two teams. You know, first note that Ohio State was playing without Jared Sullinger, arguably the single best player in college basketball this year. Second and most important going forward is that the Jayhawks did not solve some of their weaknesses that have been plaguing them all season. In fact, several of those weaknesses were exposed even more. So this time, only mark that final score in pencil, not in ink.
Here's what we saw leading into that game. Bill Self had a little tirade about his team last week, first calling them the worst passing team that he had ever seen. Not that he had ever coached, but that he had ever seen, including Kansas opponents. Then he went on with the following. We don't pass it real well. We don't catch it real well. And we don't see real well. Yet they beat Ohio State. So everything's solved, right? The players took it to heart. They cleaned it up. Good execution. No. 18 turnovers in that game. Now, when you look at the pace counts, 48 field goal attempts, 20 free throw attempts, 18 turnovers out of those attempts. That's pretty bad. Kansas didn't solve those problems yet. So when you look at the mathematical power ratings, they're going to give them an awful lot of credit for that win. Again, it shouldn't be. Sullinger wasn't there. That's not the win that you're going to see from some of the rating sources out there. When we talk about that idea of the Kansas offense getting it together, no, they didn't. 9 games into the season, they still have more turnovers than assists. How significant is that for this program? The last time they had a season where that happened was 1982 and 83 under Ted Owens, a team that went 13 and 16. So a lot of people might want to say Kansas is getting better. They turned the corner on Saturday. We don't think they did. Dan Orlovsky won't show up in the official NFL passing statistics yet because he doesn't have enough attempts. He's not up to 100 yet, only at 95. But if he did, and you saw his passer rating, you'd find out that right now Dan Orlovsky is ahead of Cam Newton, Joe Flacco, Michael Vick, Mark Sanchez, Andy Dalton, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Josh Freeman. How can that be? How can Orlovsky be at that level? We've told you this before, and we'll say it one more time. Numbers don't have real properties. They're artificial. They're synthetic. Numbers are something we create to try to use to measure what we think are real properties. As such, they don't have a soul. They don't have feelings. If you believe in lucky numbers, don't. Or come bet at a casino that I hope to have a part of someday. If you go to numerologists, don't. The only thing they do well, they're going to take your money. Numbers have a lot of difficulties because sometimes they're going to measure things that aren't real. What we have to do for you in the postmortem is let you know when things aren't real. Orlovsky, better passing rating than all those quarterbacks? No. The math has to show that because it actually did happen on the field, but it happened in a way that doesn't carry the significance that it should. So all these big databases out there are going to carry numbers forever that we attach very little weight to. So here's a weird, weird chess endgame that we call the Orlovsky Gambit. Teddy, tell us. I'm still thinking back to toilet bowl. Teddy, tell us what that Orlovsky Gambit is all about and why those numbers just aren't real.
Were you trying to make a Kojak reference there or something? You want me to grab my lollipop?
You know where it came from? When we're watching the opening of the game last night, they get the special teams touchdown. And what do you call that touchdown?
Tutty.
A tutty.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, a tutty. Huh? And that's what's come back, and I can't get that out of my head. I gotta find a way to erase that.
Tutty's a good word, you know? It's a good slang. Dan Orlovsky and the Indianapolis Colts. Well, let's start with the Colts. You know, the Colts do have some decisions to make as to what they want to do in terms of their backup quarterback position. We know that they have to decide whether they're going to hold on to the pick and take Andrew Luck or maybe Matt Barkley or whether they're going to trade that pick and acquire assets. And who's going to be the starting QB? That's not the issue we want to talk about here. We want to talk about the backup position for Indy because Indy has been underutilized at the backup quarterback position for quite some time. This year, obviously, was the year that it finally came back to haunt them. But they need to decide. Orlovsky, Painter, are either one of these two guys worth keeping as a backup quarterback in the future? You know, Painter, he crashed and burned. He failed. I don't think we'll see him again in an Indianapolis Colts uniform. And after he crashed and burned, the Colts are like, hey, we're winless anyway. Jim Caldwell, yeah, let's give Orlovsky a shot. Let's see if he's got anything in the tank. And you know, Dave talked about the lies, damn lies, and statistics. You know, Road trips to New England and Baltimore. 47 of 74 completions, 489 yards, three touchdowns. That's not bad stuff. And the Colts covered the spread in both of those games thanks to Orlovsky's passing acumen. But when we take a closer look, it doesn't look quite as pretty for Dan Orlovsky, and no reason to think about him as having a higher QB rating than all those other quarterbacks that Malinsky read just a few moments ago. Okay, 2 weeks ago in New England, they're trailing 31-3 going in the fourth quarter. They scored early in that final stanza, still weren't covering at that point. Then Orlovsky threw a pick at the Patriot 42. 7-11 left, that could have sealed it. But things broke right for Indianapolis, certainly from a point spread perspective. They got the ball back twice, and boom, 93-yard touchdown drive, 90-yard touchdown drive, two possessions, no penalties. That's 183 yards of total offense, 180 of them passing yards for Orlovsky. Then on Sunday, I mean, the Colts, if you watched any of that game, they were futile. They couldn't move the football at all. In fact, when they got the ball back at their own 24-yard line with 2 minutes and 18 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter, they had managed a grand total of 3 points and 91 yards of total offense through, again, the first 57 minutes and 42 seconds of that ballgame. So what happened next? Orlovsky drove him down the field. 76 yards against a disinterested Ravens defense playing prevent. A final play of the game, touchdown, Colts cover the spread. Orlovsky gives another passing touchdown. His QB rating goes up. They nearly doubled their output, offensive output, for the entire game on that last drive. So what's the real story of the last two games? All three of those Orlovsky touchdown passes came at the end of games in which they were badly outplayed against defenses that didn't give two hoots as to whether they got in the end zone or not. And in those three drives, that's 256 passing yards, 3 touchdowns against defenses that did not care. All those passing yards are going to go into the books. They're going to go into the stats. And just the same way as if Orlovsky had done that with the game on the line. But you should not be doing your grading as if the game was on the line. It was not. They were garbage TDs. Orlovsky didn't do anything against those defenses when it mattered most.
Okay, guys, when we come back, sit up straight, get your hair fixed, you become the stars. We're going to read your mail. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
You see, I want to start this segment like the PTI guys go, mail time, but they've already used that. So we got to think of something for that, Dave.
You want to start it like they do?
Well, it sounds good.
I like the mail this when they get to the third. I thought that was pretty effective, but the rest of it, no, little one.
Okay, mail this. This one starts from Decker88 in the Covers posting forum. He asked, what percentage of my bankroll would you guys suggest using on the play of the day? Right now, I use 3 to 4%. And this also ties into a question that we got from Darren. So let's run with it, Dave. Percentage of bankroll, what do you recommend?
You've got to make a decision as to why you're betting. Are you doing it for entertainment, just something to have a little bit of fun with on the side, or are you doing it as a specific investment to make money in the long term? Because that makes a big difference. If you're doing this for a little side recreation, forget the 3 and 4% because it's not going to be meaningful for you. If you got $1,000 in the bank, you want some entertainment, a $30 bet might not give you that level of entertainment. When we do the 3 and 4% numbers, that's based on wanting to win in the long term, being able to keep your money conservatively so that if you have a bad stretch, you stay in the game. And, of course, being able to maximize a little bit when things are going good. So make that decision first. If you're just doing this for entertainment, yeah, we don't mind someone who's got $1,000 betting $100 on a game. It's for entertainment. But if you're trying to win, that 3 and 4% would be pretty steady. We'll try to get you a pretty good return on the play of the day, running a little over 60% so far. We'll hope to keep that pace up. We've got one coming up in a few minutes that we hope will cash for us tonight.
Yeah, and my thought process on that one, Dave, is that the bigger the bankroll you have, the lower percentage that you should be using on any given play. And when you have a small bankroll, just like if you have a small investment portfolio in stocks or any other, you know, mutual funds or any other type of investment that you make, when you have less to protect, you want to be more aggressive and try to build that bankroll or that stock portfolio to a level that you have something to protect. Once you have a bankroll that's significant, and significant is obviously different for every individual out there, but once you have a bankroll that for you is significant, at that point, you really, you know, when we start talking about percentage of bankroll involved in any given play, you're probably going to want to notch that down and cut that down a notch or two and not be quite as aggressive. But I'm with Dave. If you have a $100 bankroll, you know, you don't be making $5 bets. And there are people out there with $100 bankrolls. There's nothing wrong with having a $100 or a $500 bankroll. But once you get into five- and six-figure bankrolls, generally, you're looking to reduce that percentage on any individual wager.
Next letter is going to come from Kirk. This is an email. He says, I've been searching for a show like this for years. Your insight is invaluable. Thanks, Kirk. I hope you guys are here to stay. I've been searching to find a website that displays the true opening Vegas lines as well as the current lines. In my handicapping, I've been more concerned with the opening line than the current line because it shows what Vegas is thinking before public perception comes into play. Which site would you recommend?
Well, there's a couple of points here. First of all, is that the opening line generally comes from offshore in the modern world. So while Vegas, the name Vegas, still has that reputation, the reality is that the betting markets are centered when it comes to the opening numbers, you know, in faraway places. So seeing what the Vegas sportsbooks, I mean, really, when we talk about aggressive Vegas sportsbooks posting overnight numbers, what do we got? Wynn, sometimes Hilton. There's not as much out there as you will find in other places for opening numbers. That being said, if you're looking for a cursory look, a basic assessment of where the numbers have opened, go to Covers. You know, here, let's flash that URL on the screen. It's covers.com/sportslines.aspx. So that you can find it right from the homepage there on Covers. You can get a good assessment of what the numbers were at the opener and what they are now. If you're looking for something, if that intrigues you and you're looking for something more detailed, you can sign up for free trials at some of the major line services like Sports Options that Dave and I both use. Don Best has them as well. And you can sign up for free trials with that and get, you know, literally hundreds of sports books and opening numbers and half times and all that. But if you want those numbers long term, it's going to cost you. You can get those free trials, though, to check it out. Here's one from Kevin in Baltimore. Kevin says, thank you for addressing my question about realistic expectations. The more I think about your philosophy, the more reminded about Joey Knish from Rounders. Joey Knish, a character that's dear to my heart, no question. It sounds like the type of betting style that you promote and recommend is a slow, patient grind. The problem with that slow grind is that it's very labor-intensive, and you lose that rush from winning because of the hours and hours at work that go into it. So my question is, when does a play change from an opinion to an actual play that you put money on? Do you need all three of the handicapping procedures to line up, fundamental, technical, and situational, or is it one big angle that you like enough?
It's a great question that you brought up, and it goes back to one of the earlier ones we answered. Decide what you want out of the endeavor. If you want to make money, you're playing a certain way, but if you want that rush, go ahead and go for that rush. There's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you want, you go after it that way. Here's the problem you're going to have. The way that it closes, when you talk about the idea of fundamental, technical, and situational all adding up, you're not going to find those because when they do, there's not going to be any market value. When you get several things that converge to a side of a game, the odds makers are going to see it. And it's one of the things that will be a recurring theme through this show is understanding the odds makers process. And there are a lot of people in media that we follow, and it's going to sound unfair when we refer to them this way, is they'll say, this guy does a great job of explaining the line. And it'll be someone who's on maybe a handicapping show or a tout show saying why this team should cover in a particular setting, and yet all they're doing is they're kind of telling you why the line was already set at that level in the first place. So when you see these multitudes of factors add up, you haven't really found that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, because the odds makers will have seen a great deal of that. In terms of deciding what's a play, what's a lean, that comes down to everyone, how many games you're comfortable playing, because we will play a lot of games over the course of the week at various amounts. Sometimes it's a small play because it's a game you like a little bit, you found a good number on. So you go and you grab the good number. Sometimes it's a play that's got a lot of meat to it. You're doing a lot of different things. You sort of have to sit down, take a deep breath, and decide, what do you want out of the endeavor? But I do understand that idea that if you work real hard and you're playing 3%, that's maybe not hitting the high notes for you.
Yeah, I mean, the Joey Knish comment, I think, is very real. And if you haven't seen it, come on, everyone's seen Rounders, right? You know, it's a movie that started the whole poker boom. Joey Knish is the grinder. He's the guy that, you know, he's not worried about going to Vegas and living the high life. He's worried about making a living for himself and his family. And I strongly believe in that philosophy. If you want to make money betting sports, if you want to rush, if you want to, whoa, let's get the gambling rush, come on. You do this every day. It's not about the rush. It's about making money. And certainly that's the strategy that I would recommend. It doesn't have to be your strategy. That's the strategy that I personally use and that I would definitely recommend. You also bring up this point about fundamental, situational, technical. And, you know, when you read a lot of the articles about handicapping, that's what you're talking about. Fundamental, you know, the three, you know, are the trends and angles pointing in that direction. Dave and I certainly concentrate a lot on the matchups, the fundamental, who's going to win in the trenches, who's going to win in the passing game, who's going to win in the running game. And we certainly concentrate also on the situational, what teams are in particularly good or bad spots. But in the 21st century, in 2011, heck, it's almost 2012, in my mind, the single most important thing you can do as a handicapper is not freak out about the fundamental, situational, and technical stuff and look for market value. The markets are telling you what teams are supposed to be this good and what teams aren't, what roles they're supposed to be good in and what roles they're not supposed to be good in. And if you're paying attention to what mistakes the market is making on a daily basis, in my mind, that's the number one way to win in sports betting right now in this century. Not that the other methods don't work. We utilize them. But appropriate market valuation really is, in my mind, the number one thing you can do to put money in your pocket. One last email here, or this is actually from the posting forum. Babano, what's up, buddy? Good friend Babano coming in here, and he says, I'm interested in Malinsky's take specifically on tonight's Central Michigan-Minnesota game in college hoops. For those who may not know, Malinsky had a free play on this on his Covers Experts page on Central Michigan plus 17 against Temple on Saturday, and the Chippewas hung around long enough to cover the number, losing by only 13. Can we hold our noses and trust the Chips to hang around again tonight in an inflated number against a Gopher squad that isn't exactly built to be laying and covering as double-digit chalk against anyone? Sounds like Babano's got a lean on the dog in this one. Dave, do you agree with him?
I'm not sure we can come right back with Central Michigan here. What's been troubling for us is the intermediate game after that. They went to Tennessee State, got beat. Now, the game didn't fall that far off the spread. They took 5, lost by 8. But inside of that game, there was a 20-0 run by Tennessee State. Now, when we bet road dogs a lot, we're going to talk about teams that have staying power. We want to use that phrase, tough out, teams that have grit, that'll play with poise. And you go to Tennessee State, you play in front of a small crowd against a weak team, and you allow a 20-0 run to take place, that means you sort of got off kilter a little bit. And Ernie Ziegler, after the game, really felt that way. He said, you know, we did not respond to adversity well. I'd be just a little bit concerned that they don't have their confidence where it needs to be for this setting tonight. That type of loss is a type that maybe you don't shake off that easily.
When we come back, we're going to break down all the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
All right! It's 11 a.m. Heck, it's almost 11:30. That means it's time to, pop the top, the first beer of the day. We got an Insider Six-Pack for you starting right now. We're going to start with Chris Paul. You know, less than 2 weeks from the start of the NBA season, some of the roster situations are really a mess right now. No question about it. We're going to start breaking them down day by day for you so you get a nice feel for what's going on around the NBA as the time leads up to those Christmas Day openers. And right now, frankly, the oddsmakers having a tough time too, both in terms of their future book prices and in terms of opening numbers for the first couple of games. So let's start with Chris Paul, who had last week's blockbuster trade between the Lakers and the Rockets and the Hornets. Yeah, that was blocked by the league, or blocked by Dan Gilbert, or blocked by David Stern, or blocked by whoever you want to say it was blocked by. Bottom line, trade didn't happen. And then apparently Chris Paul was close to being a Laker, a Clipper, I should say, last night. But L.A. balked at the trade, which reportedly included, I mean, this is insane, Eric Gordon, Chris Kaman, Al-Farouq Aminu, Eric Bledsoe, oh, and an unprotected number one pick from the 2012 draft. And it's not the Clippers' number one pick. It's the pick you're getting from Minnesota. Gee, you think that was a little bit too much to pay? I know Chris Paul's good, but you can understand why the Clips declined on that deal. But we've heard so far today, earlier this morning, that the deal may be back on the table. They're still doing some tweaking. Meanwhile, Chauncey Billups said, nobody better sign me on waivers. What did Donald Sterling do? He signed Chauncey Billups on waivers. He'd been waived by the Knicks. And Caron Butler, they just signed. He played only 29 games for Dallas last year. Injury-riddled career, but certainly a talented guy. He's coming back off a ruptured tendon in his right knee. The acquisition of both Billups and Butler does give the Clippers some pretty nice chips to move should they get involved in a Chris Paul trade.
Butler wasn't the only player to leave Dallas since they won the NBA championship. A lot more turnover than we usually see from a team that just won a trophy. Butler's gone, Tyson Chandler gone, J.J. Barea's gone. In for the Mavericks right now, Lamar Odom, Delonte West, and Vince Carter. Does it sound like maybe there's a little bit of a hole inside? We believe there is. If the season started today, it would be Brendan Hayward and Ian Mahimi as the only two players up front. We're hearing there's a good chance that Dallas may be signing Samuel Dalembert, who probably is on his way out from Sacramento.
Yeah, Dalembert, of course, has not been re-signed by the Kings, and the deck appears to be cleared for him to leave. And now that Sacramento just spent some money to sign Chuck Hayes, who's, you know, well, I love Chuck Hayes. He's one of these blue-collar guys. He just works hard, grabs boards, and, you know, he's going to be an interesting fit in Sacramento because he has a great work ethic, which is something that hasn't always been the case for many Kings, DeMarcus Cousins included, and he doesn't need the ball in the low post. He can get all of his offensive numbers off of putbacks and dishes. He's not a guy that needs the ball, the offense to run through his hands. He's not a guy that needs the ball at any point. And he's going to add some stability to a run-and-gun bunch. And for you fantasy players out there, and I know there are a lot of fantasy guys when it comes to basketball, take a look at those Hayes rebounding numbers and imagine the opportunities he's going to get. And this type of an up-tempo team, especially since no one else in the team seems to fight for boards.
It's one of those great little subtleties. Guys get great rebounding numbers, not necessarily because they're good, but their own teammates don't get in their way. And I think it's going to be a great case with Hayes in Sacramento. Let's go to the college hardwoods tonight and back into our category of courting advantages. Wisconsin, the road team, UW-Milwaukee, the home team. Yeah, maybe on the schedule, maybe the way they're shading it, but it probably won't feel that way when they take the court. U.S. Cellular Arena in Milwaukee, seats over 10,000 people. They said it's 10,111. UWM rarely goes above 4,000 for a home game. It means plenty of tickets available for Wisconsin fans, and a lot of Wisconsin fans do live in the area. From a handicapping standpoint, we got to bring this one into play. To show you why, when we talk about betting 3% and 4%, you can never go too extreme because of the way these balls bounce. A week and a half ago, we had a play in the day on DePaul over Wisconsin-Milwaukee. The following day in the opening take, we lamented how awkward that was when two players from Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Tony Meyer and Paris Gulley, both went 5-for-5 from three-point range, a combined 10-for-10. We tried to find the last time any team had two players go 5-for-5 or better in a college game. We could never find it. What did those two kids do in the ensuing game, a bad loss at Northern Iowa? They both went 0-for-4 from three-point range, a collective 0-for-8. 10-for-10, 0-for-8. Try to run the math on that. You're going to see your calculator going to stretch the numbers way, way, way out.
Yeah, a few too many standard deviations for Dave to be comfortable with. Let's talk about the Miami Dolphins and Tony Sperano. Right now, the Dolphins sans Sperano are going to have to make some decisions about Matt Moore at quarterback. whether he should play following last week's concussion, weak offensive line in front of him. Obviously, three different starters went down after the opening kick against Philly last week. But obviously, Sperano not going to be making that call. Instead, it's going to be defensive back coach Todd Bowles who's going to get his opportunity with the Dolphins over the last 3 weeks of the season after Sperano got fired yesterday. Even after the Dolphins went on a real nice run for the better part of 6 weeks, covering numbers, winning games. Last week's tournament was against Philly, where the offensive lineman, again, besieged with injuries. That slams the door on the Sperano era in Miami. And I don't think that Bowles is necessarily going to get a real opportunity to audition for this job, even if the Dolphins win out. The bottom line is that the Miami owner, Stephen Ross, is a guy who's very concerned about the empty seats. And there have been a lot of empty seats in Miami in recent years, and particularly this year. And there's been talk that he's going to open the checkbook. So anytime a coach, an owner is talking about opening the checkbook, the same retread names that we hear every year getting thrown about. Someone's going to want Jeff Fisher. Someone's going to want Bill Cowher. Someone's going to want John Gruden. Maybe. But Miami, at least in theory, is in play for all three of those guys if they decide to turn to the coaching ranks. And perhaps the Dolphins made the decision here because it was something of a surprise for them to do it right here prior to week 15 of the season. But I guess they thought with Kansas City firing Haley, with the Jaguars firing Del Rio, the Dolphins didn't want to fall too far behind in the coaching search.
Not much bad news coming anywhere from Green Bay this year. Packers having a sensational season. Something may have finally tripped them up a little bit. Greg Jennings going to be out at least until the playoffs. He will not play again in the regular season. Now, the Jennings numbers are awfully good. 67 catches, 949 yards, 9 touchdowns. That's Pro Bowl stuff, but his impact may go beyond that. Jennings can play all three of the wide receiver positions the Packers have in their offense, and they're very good at moving him to wherever they can get the best matchup, spotting weaknesses in the opposing defenses. Aaron Rodgers and Jennings have an awfully good chemistry. Now you go all the way from Jennings and that experience to rookie Randall Cobb being moved up as the next guy in line. Doesn't have that same flexibility. It's going to take a lot out of their attack. Again, when you watch the Packers play, so much of it is their designs have been so good at breaking down opposing defenses. It's more than just Jennings' numbers that they lose. They lose that flexibility. It's been awfully important to them.
When we come back, it's going to be our first Bowling for Dollars segment. We're going to talk college hoops. Guess what, guys? It's money time.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
All right, guys, let's raise the roof on a Tuesday. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Albuquerque on Saturday and take a look at the New Mexico Bowl. Right now, Temple, -6.5, total of 48 in their matchup against Wyoming.
When we first went through the bowl matchups, on the show a week ago, we lamented the fact that we had some draws that we didn't like. Teams that we wanted to play on stuck playing each other. Teams we wanted to play against also drawing each other. This is one of these problematical games. A lot of times this particular Albuquerque Bowl gets teams that are flat. This is not a reward for a lot of teams. It is for these two. These two teams will come to play. Temple felt they got snubbed by the Bulls last year. They're happy to make the trip. Wyoming showing real progress under Dave Christensen. Actually won against Fresno State as an underdog in this same bowl a couple of years ago. They don't mind going back to Albuquerque. And keep in mind that even though New Mexico is in the same conference with Wyoming, they played New Mexico at home this year. So it's not a second trip to a venue that might not have created much excitement. So the teams are going to bring it. So where do we start? Let's go to the matchups. We love the Temple ground game into the Wyoming defense. Temple, number 7 in the nation in rushing, with a terrific 1-2 punch. Bernard Pierce gets the tough yards inside. Matt Brown can scoot around the edges. But look at Chris Coyer at quarterback. They moved him to the starting quarterback after a bye week, late October. Coyer not only runs for 491 yards, but 8.6 per carry. That's almost like having three running backs in the backfield at the same time, that can matter against a Wyoming rush defense that was number 115 in the country, allowing 230 yards per game.
Yeah, Wyoming's gotten gashed by the run all year, and last year too, but they found a way to work around it. Dave Christensen's team, 14-4 against the spread as a dog on the road or in neutral site venue. So they've been very, very good in this role. The Wyoming, in their last two bowl games, we saw them as double-digit dogs right here in Las Vegas against UCLA. They win that game straight up. Was it last year or 2 years ago against Fresno State? Plus 11. They win that game in straight-up fashion. So twice as double-digit dogs. Their only two bowl games since the early 90s. The Wyoming Cowboys have come through not just plus the points, but also on the money line. They're covering in this role. They got a nice track record in these bowl games. And, you know, this is a team that gave up 604 rushing yards combined against bowl-bound San Diego State and bowl-bound Air Force. And guess what? They found ways to win both games. True freshman quarterback Brett Smith, he's been impressive. 2,476 passing yards, 18 touchdowns to only 8 INTs. And the 8 INTs is key here. Temple, with a pressure defense, the quarterback facing them doesn't make mistakes, maybe Wyoming has a chance to hang around here.
And here's the other element that matters against that pressure. Nelson and Smith have a great season passing. And for those of you who haven't seen Wyoming play yet, you're going to like this kid. Again, just a freshman, played some tough competition, more than held his own. But he also ran for 666 yards and 10 touchdowns at 5.5 yards a carry. That yards per carry is big because, remember, if you're a quarterback, your rushing stats are including sacks. So he did an awfully good job. So we might be able to see him counter that Temple pressure pretty well. One of the things we like about Dave Christensen, he's got a deep playbook. There's a lot of bags of tricks that they're able to work with. That's big at bowl time. Because you have no reason to hold anything back. You let things out there, and Temple will not have seen a lot of those tricks yet. So one of the things that helps when you're looking at bowls, look for how elaborate an offense can get. Don't be surprised if Christensen throws three or four plays out there at Temple that he haven't used all year and Temple could not have seen on film.
Yeah, so we have one offense with an edge, we have the other offense in an edge, and we have the natural pre-inclination to look at the early season bowl games over the total. Something to think about if you want to get involved in this one. Let's go to Starkville, Mississippi. Dry county. Not a fun place to hang out. Mississippi State minus 13 at home tonight against Florida Atlantic. And this game, Dave, is where perhaps revenge, a dish best served cold? Or what? Was that what the opening tease was on this one? Cold? Revenge? What's going on here?
It was better than the idea of digging two graves, although that comes into mind now after that money time intro. This is one time where we think a team will come to play on finals week. And here's where revenge can matter. People will talk about revenge sometimes in big situations, playoffs, bowl games. Doesn't matter then. In a big game where you know both teams are going to come to play, revenge is a non-issue. Here's where it can be an issue. When it's one of these out-of-the-way games, where it's not packed in the line, and it can provide an actual motivation that will matter on the court. Mississippi State brings it. They lost at home 61-59 to Florida Atlantic last year. We'll take this from Jalen Steele, who you'll see on the court tonight. Revenge. That's basically on my mind. Revenge. We're going to go out focused and get this win. Now, we like that for a setting like this, because otherwise, if Florida Atlantic comes to your gym, you don't get that excited. They will be focused. Keep in mind, though, that even though they lost the game last year, not the same Mississippi State team, because the key cogs, D. Bost, Renardo Sidney, Arnett Moultrie, they didn't play in last year's game. So I think we're going to see a pretty good focus out of Mississippi State tonight, and they might take advantage of the fact that the visitors don't bring that same passion.
Was that a Jalen Steele quote about revenge, or was that Sideshow Bob you were talking about there? David, nice Simpsons reference for those of you out there. Somebody still watches The Simpsons, right? All right, anyhow. Florida Atlantic is in, I'm not going to say a world of hurt tonight, but it's certainly not a very good matchup for them, considering, you know, again, last year when they beat Mississippi State on this floor, Bulldogs without their three best players, all three of whom are going to play tonight, and Boston in particular, has been in a zone the last three games, just draining everything from three-point range, and even talking about how big the basket looks. And when you get a player of his caliber that's in the zone, certainly a good sign for the Bulldogs. And then we look at the two big men, you know, Sidney and Moultrie. For Mississippi State, neither of whom was on the floor last year. Well, guess what? Florida Atlantic's biggest player, you know, the 6'8 forward, Corey White, who's a bull of a man. Hey, he's not one of these, you know, skinny guys that's going to hang out on the perimeter, but he does not necessarily have the size and physical acumen to hang in the paint with two of the biggest bruisers from the SEC. This is one game where Mississippi State should be able to control the low post and win the battle of the boards by margin. But the spot here for Florida Atlantic is something of a concern as well. On deck, just a revenge matchup for them against Miami, an in-state rival. And it wasn't not just Miami. It's a Miami team that knocked them out of the NIT last year in blowout fashion. Certainly a more important game for FAU than this one is.
So how far can we go with this one? It's play of the day time. Let's go ahead and look at Mississippi State minus the 13. Since coming back from Madison Square Garden, where they beat Texas A&M and Arizona, 5-0 straight up at home, 4-1 against the spread, and we like the chemistry coming together. That last win against Troy State, 30 assists. We're not likely to see a team have 30 assists in a line game again this year. Good chemistry, good passion, chance to blow out a disinterested opponent. Mississippi State minus a 13, the Vegas Sports Day play of the day.
Hey, Bulldogs. That's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again mañana.